the names commonly dedicated to these planes, taking them in order of materiality, rising from the heavier to the finer, are the physical, the astral, the mental or devachanic, the buddhic, and the nirvanic. Greater than this last are two others, but they are so far above our present power of concept that for the moment they might be left out of consideration. It ought to be understood that the matter of each of these planes differs from that of the one below it in the same way as, though to a much higher degree than, vapor differs from solid matter. The astral region which I'm to try to describe is the second of these planes of nature, the next above, or inside, that physical world with which we're all familiar. It has frequently been called the realm of illusion, not that it's itself any more elusive than the physical world, but, as of the extreme unreliableness of the impressions returned from it by the untrained seer. This is to be accounted for chiefly by two remarkable features of the astral world. First, that a lot of its inhabitants have a fantastic power of changing their forms, and also of casting practically inexhaustible glamour over those with whom they choose to sport. And second, that sight on that plane is a faculty really dissimilar from and much more extended than physical vision. An object is viewed, as it were, from all sides at one time. The interior of a solid being is plainly open to the view as the exterior. It's therefore obvious that an ignorant visitor to this new world might well find considerable trouble in understanding what he truly does see, and still more in transforming his vision into the very inadequate language of ordinary speech. He has to learn not only to see properly but to transform the memory of what he has seen precisely from one plane to the other, and to assist him in this he's trained to carry his consciousness without break from the physical plane to the astral or devachanic and back once more. For till that may be done, there's always a possibility that his recollections might be partially lost or distorted during the blank time interval which separates his periods of awareness on the assorted planes. The first introduction to this noteworthy region comes to individuals in assorted ways. A few only once in their whole lives under some strange influence become sensitive enough to recognize the presence of one of its inhabitants, and maybe, because the experience doesn't repeat itself, they might come in time to trust that on that occasion they must have been the victims of hallucination. Other people find themselves with increasing frequency seeing and hearing something to which those around them are blind and deaf. Other people again, and maybe this is the commonest experience of all, start to recollect with greater and greater clarity that which they've seen or heard on that other plane during sleep. If we speak of a man as rising from one plane or subplane to a different, we don't think of him as necessarily moving in space at all, but instead as transferring his consciousness from one level to another, bit by bit becoming unresponsive to the vibrations of one order of matter, and beginning instead to answer to those of a higher and more refined order, so that one world with its scenery and inhabitants would appear to fade slowly out of his view, while a different world of a more elevated character would get through. We must mention first that every material object, every particle even, has its astral twin, and this counterpart is itself not a simple body, but is commonly exceedingly complex, being composed of assorted kinds of astral matter. Also, each living creature is surrounded with an atmosphere of its own, commonly called its aura, and in the case of humans this aura forms of itself a really fascinating branch of study. It's seen as an oval mass of luminous mist of extremely complex structure, and from its shape has occasionally been called the auric egg. The universal life fluid as it is absorbed and specialized, as it circulates in rosy light throughout the body, as it eventually radiates from the healthy individual in its altered form, is also perfectly obvious. Most bright and most easily seen of all, maybe, though belonging to a more polished order of matter, the astral, is that aura which expresses by its bright and ever-changing flashes of color the different wants which sweep across the man's mind from moment to moment. This is the true astral body. But to see these, the student must, naturally, have developed the vision to do so. One additional point deserves mention in connection with the appearance of physical matter if viewed from the astral plane, and that's that the higher vision when amply developed possesses the power of magnifying at will the minutest physical particle to any wanted size, as if by a microscope, though its magnifying power is hugely greater than that of any microscope ever made or ever likely to be made. It will by this time be obvious that although the average objects of the physical world form the background to life on particular levels of the astral plane, yet so much more is seen of their true appearance and features that the general effect differs widely from that with which we're familiar. For the interest of illustration, take a rock as an illustration of the simpler class of objects. If regarded with trained sight, it's no mere inert mass of stone. Firstly, the whole of the physical matter of the rock is seen rather than a really small part of it. Second, the vibrations of its physical particles are detectable. Third, it seemed to possess an astral twin composed of assorted grades of astral matter, whose particles are likewise in constant motion. Fourth, the universal life is seen to be circling through it and radiating from it. Fifth, an aura will be seen encircling it, though this is naturally much less extended and altered than in the case of the higher realms. Sixth, its appropriate elemental essence is seen penetrating it, ever active but ever vacillating. In the case of the vegetable, animal, and human realms, the complications are naturally much more numerous. An account of the scenery of the astral plane would be incomplete without a little mention of what have frequently, though erroneously, been called the records of the astral light. These records, which are really a sort of materialization of the divine memory, a living photographic representation of all that has ever occurred, are truly and permanently impressed upon a very much higher level, and are only reflected in a more or less spastic manner on the astral plane, so that one whose power of vision doesn't rise above this will be likely to get only occasional and disconnected pictures of the past rather than a coherent narrative. However, nevertheless, these reflected pictures of all sorts of past events are constantly being reproduced in the astral world, and form a crucial part of the surroundings. Having sketched in, however slimly, the background of our picture, we have to now attempt to complete the figures, to describe the dwellers of the astral plane. The immense assortment of these beings makes it extremely hard to arrange and tabulate them. Maybe the most convenient technique will be to divide them into three great classes: the human, the non-human, and the artificial.